And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is success. My first guest, Michelle Prince, told us how to have a winning life from her proven system of achieving success. My next guest will tell us about the enduring fascination with Charlie Chaplin, who began his movie career about 100 years ago today. Chaplin was the greatest success in movies during the 1910s through the 1930s. She's going to explain why Charlie Chaplin's movies are really relevant to a modern audience today. And if you're interested, you want to join the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Lisa Stein is an assistant professor of English at Ohio University in Zanesville, where she specializes in 20th century British and American literature, that I get, and of all things, silent film. We'll talk to her about that. She's published a new edition of Charlie Chaplin's A Comedian Sees the World, a travelogue he wrote back in 1932 and 1933 about his world tour following the premiere of the movie City Lights in February of 1931. She is currently writing the first life and art study of Charlie's half-brother, Sid Chaplin. Lisa lives in a 1926 house in historic Zanesville, Ohio, with her two cats, appropriately named Charlie and Sid. Welcome to the show, Lisa. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for joining us here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. And the first question that I've got to ask you is, how did you become infatuated with Charlie Chaplin and his work?
Well, it started back when I was in middle school here in Ohio. We used to have an hour-long lunch break, half of which we ate, and the other half we got to watch old comedy movies, everything from the Marx Brothers to Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton, and Laurel and Hardy, of course.
Wow, so that was part of the curriculum in Ohio, that you got to watch movies on your lunch break.
Right, back in the 70s, yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow, all right. So what was it about, you know, compared to Laurel and Hardy, the Three Stooges, others that I think of in that genre, what was it about Charlie Chaplin that was so endearing to you?
Charlie's films were largely silent films. He only made five talking films. And so the silent ones, without the dialogue and the talking and all that sort of thing, they're much easier to kind of project yourself onto in some ways, you know, because the little tramp figure is such a abstract characterization that everybody can find something about him that they really like or that appeals to them.
Okay. All right. Well, no doubt about it, the Little Tramp was his most enduring figure. That's what he's always remembered for. Let me ask you, though, now, both as a professor and as a lover of Charlie Chaplin, was Charlie Chaplin a product of the time, the Roaring Twenties, or really did he define the times in his roles?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say his little character came out of the late 19th century. It was actually a music hall character. But it's interesting that it was kind of a British characterization that became popular here in the States. So it's kind of, I don't know, kind of a difficult question to answer. Perhaps it was the down and out that were most attracted to this character because they could see him in every case triumphing over authority and over some sort, different sorts of changes of fortune and things like that in every film. So perhaps that sort of self-made man image even came through in his little tramp character and certainly in his personal life as well. So, of course, that's something that we as Americans take to heart, you know.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you said that because I was wondering whether Charlie Chaplin, the tramp character, was really a reflection of America and the American spirit. And I think in the world, Charlie Chaplin sort of portrayed that as the quintessential American spirit that's out there.
Right.
Now, interestingly enough, in 1999, the American Film Institute named Charlie Chaplin the 10th greatest male screen legend of all time. Now, I found that pretty interesting because he's hardly a leading man type of a character. You think of leading men as Clark Gable, you know, William Holden, Humphrey Bogart, and so forth. What is it about Charlie Chaplin that holds audiences' attentions, do you think, Lisa?
I think it's the timelessness of the character. I mean, the character's a hodgepodge sort of character. He's got an outfit that's composed of tattered elements as well as gentrified elements. He's, he's trying to make himself look presentable when he's got no job in most cases. I mean, he comes into a film without anyone or anything, and he has all of these adventures, and then he leaves the same way. I mean, we have no backstory on him. He has no possessions, no friends, no family. So it's really a character that relates to all of us in some way. I mean, we can see ourselves as being downtrodden, but we also like to think of ourselves as being people that will make it, and especially in times of economic woe like today and like in the 1930s when his little character was very popular too. So.
We're talking to Lisa Stein, everybody. She is an authority on Charlie Chaplin. In fact, she has re-released a book, A Comedian Sees the World, by Charlie Chaplin. It's his travelogue after the opening of the movie City Lights. Lisa, arguably Chaplin's most famous movie is Modern Times, which was done in 1936. Mm-hmm. He's got other great films. I just mentioned City Lights, 1931, The Immigrant, 1917, The Gold Rush, 1925, The Great Dictator, where he parodies Adolf Hitler, 1940. What do Charlie Chaplin's films have to say to modern audiences today, do you think?
Well, 1936, the Modern Times film, for instance, was the first film in which he consciously put in social commentary. So he was really the precursor of folks like George Clooney, you know, who are doing that sort of thing today. So, whereas George may not hearken back to Chaplin, he really got the idea of political commentary for his films from someone like Chaplin, who felt that even as a movie star, he had the right to make commentary in films, you know. I think his films are very hopeful. In most cases, maybe not Monsieur Verdoux, but other films of his, and even The Great Dictator, ends with an incredibly inspirational speech that talks about world peace and the fact that we all really need to work together to make these things happen. So I think hope would probably be the one thing that every film relates to the audience, you know.
And that's what we love best about the Chaplin films, is that sense of hope that you can come into the world with nothing, as he comes into each film with nothing, and hopefully leave making it a little bit better place. That makes some sense.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to Lisa Stein, everybody. Lisa, now, you may or may not know this, because I don't know how good your geography is of California, but we're in Ventura, California. We're just 25 miles south of Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, Charlie Chaplin teamed up with Douglas Fairbanks and Mary Pickford, and started the Montecito Inn, which is a hotel. It's just 20 miles north of where we are here at the studio today. Chaplin and Fairbanks and Pickford, as well as D.W. Griffin, also started something else very important, that is United Artists Movie Theater.
Right.
What made United Artists so revolutionary in its day?
Well, the United Artists was actually a distributing firm initially. The movie theater is separate. But United Artists really changed our Hollywood film industry because the distributing companies at the time wanted to kind of work around the huge salaries that stars were beginning to make back in the 19-teens. This happened in 1919, actually. And so Chaplin, Pickford, and Fairbanks, and also my guy, Sid Chaplin, was really behind it, decided that they wanted to see if they could stop all of this. They had hired some private investigators, listened to some conversations, and decided to create their own organization, which guaranteed that they would be able to continue to have large salaries and to be paid what they felt they were worth. So without that particular organization, we would not have the Hollywood system that we have today.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, Lisa Stein, that the Hollywood system today is really not at all like the studio system that we think of in the 40s and the 50s.
Right.
In fact, the studio system really broke down in the late 1960s, roughly, interestingly enough, roughly about the same time that free agency appeared in Major League Baseball.
Okay.
Seriously, I mean, it's timing-wise is about the same. So tell us, do you think we're ever going to return back to powerful studios controlling the movies as they did in those 1940s, 1950s?
Oh, I don't think so. I think the world of film today is just so vastly different because of the technology, you know, the internet, YouTube, and all these sorts of things. I think we're going to see major changes in the coming years, don't you?
Well, I do, but I'm not the expert, and I'm not going to prognosticate on that. So I was looking for your opinion on that, Lisa, because
yeah,
I think that's more important.
I don't think the studios are going to be powerful again. I really don't.
You think that they're gone with the wind,
mm-hmm.
to borrow a phrase there?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you alluded to it. You alluded to Sid Chaplin in your last answer there. Your next book coming out is about Sid Chaplin, who is Charlie's half-brother.
Right.
Why did you choose this topic, and what makes Sid such a compelling figure for you?
Oh, Sid is compelling for many reasons. But he is really the brains behind the Charlie Chaplin phenomenon in many respects. He was a devious but very wise businessman. He engineered Charlie's first huge film deal, which was in 1916, to Mutual Films. He received $1 million for that film built for 1 year.
Wow.
And we looked at the index, and it's like worth $28 million today.
Mm-hmm.
So he engineered that particular contract and several others over the coming years, got Charlie his first studio and all those sorts of things. And he was also in on the ground floor of lots of other businesses in Hollywood. He actually had the first domestic airline in the United States, which is called Sid Chaplin Aircraft Corporation. And they used to fly from Los Angeles Harbor out to Catalina and back. And here's a British man, you know, with our first domestic airline in America. It's pretty incredible.
That is.
But he was he had lots of failures, but also lots of successes, and a film career of his own, which spanned 37 films, all silent. He has a lot of scandals in his life, which are very interesting to write about, and just a very, very intriguing character.
Well, now, don't leave us in the dark, Lisa. You're talking about the good stuff here. So, first of all, describe what was Sid's relationship to Charlie, because they were half-brothers. They shared a mother, a common mother?
Right. No. They did. Sid was the firstborn, an illegitimate son to Hannah Chaplin, Charlie's mother as well. And so the three of them pretty much went through this grueling childhood of poverty and insanity and misery that inspired Chaplin's films, you know. Sidney was actually, as the oldest son, was the one that first got them out of that environment by being able to work. He went to sea, first of all. And from there, both brothers went into the entertainment business. But they were very close. Like all siblings, of course, they had their moments. They had their tiffs, their battles, but very, very close.
All right.
Throughout their lives.
We're talking about Sid Chaplin, Charlie Chaplin's older brother. It's fascinating. And you alluded to the scandals. Now, the Chaplin family was not without its scandals. Of course, we know that Charlie Chaplin was exiled from the United States because of his affair with an underage child. What were some of Sid's great scandals that we want to know more about?
Well, is this a PG show or?
No, this is all adults. Just don't say anything profane,
right.
And we'll be fine.
He assaulted a young actress in 1929 when he went to Britain to work for British International Pictures. He was over there with a film contract. Had just completed one film and was about to start another, and got into a rather, an unfortunate altercation with a young actress in which he bit off her nipple.
Oh, ouch.
Yes, and that ended his film career because she sued. He did not come up on criminal charges or anything, but he was sued by his particular film company because he was in breach of contract. He fled. He ran off into the continental Europe and tried to hide out, and became a bankrupt because of it, and never went back into films again. He was basically blacklisted for all of that behavior, and he had even less. He had constant affairs. I mean, he had two wives that stuck with him throughout his life, but he had more affairs than Charlie would ever dream of having. So,
wow. That's interesting. I mean, we're talking to Lisa Stein, everybody. She's an expert on Charlie Chaplin. We're talking about Charlie's brother, Sid. What is it, Lisa, now that you've studied both men, what is it about their relationship with women that was so tortured?
Well, I'm sure they witnessed their mother going through quite a lot. I mean, the only husband that she had was Charles Chaplin Sr. That relationship lasted less than 2 years. She was a woman alone in early 20th century London trying to support herself and two children, and suffering from mental illness as well. I mean, the cards were stacked against her. I'm sure that both young boys saw many terrible things going on with her attempts to keep them alive, you know. We can only imagine, you know.
Mm. Interesting, Lisa. Well, now let's return back to the subject of Charlie Chaplin himself.
Sure.
Robert Downey Jr. portrayed Charlie Chaplin in the movie titled Chaplin back in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure you saw the movie. How accurate of an interpretation of Charlie Chaplin was Robert Downey's performance?
Robert Downey's personal performance in that film was excellent. What we all have problems with was the actual story that was told, which was not quite truthful in many respects, but as far as Robert Downey Jr.'s performance, excellent.
All right, so the performance was excellent. What was inaccurate about the history, the biography that he portrayed?
Well, a lot of it was, it was a long film, but still a lot of things had to be, encapsulated in a shorter time periods in order to get the whole story in. And so untruths come out in that respect. But things like the lipstick fetish, there was never anything like that. There was just a lot of hype about his few scandals in life that were really minimal compared to the work that he produced. And you know, yes, he had two wives that were underage, but he also had a 35-year marriage and produced 8 children that were, you know, all upstanding individuals. So it's hard to focus on such things, especially in our times today when much more is going on, you know.
Well, it certainly, there are more bigger scandals today, but I think more of our private lives are public today as well. And we'll be talking about that with my next guest. But right now we're talking to Lisa Stein. We're talking about Charlie Chaplin. And Lisa, how do you think history remembers Charlie Chaplin? And do we do an adequate job of remembering the impact that he had on film?
In America, no, we don't. America, unfortunately, only remembers his eviction from the United States in 1952, which was simply a re-entry permit revoking, really, and the fact that he had underage wives. That's basically all they remember, which is really unfortunate, and why I had an international Charlie Chaplin conference here this last weekend to try to alleviate that problem. In Europe, on the other hand, they consider him a great artist, and he does have longevity over there. I mean, he has a large following still, especially in places like France and past Europe into Japan. Japan's fanatical about him.
Really?
Yeah, and they can see the art that's involved in his films. I mean, his little character is very abstract. It lends itself well to critique and interpretation, you know, and thereby has great longevity.
Interesting. Now, the Japanese, are there any other countries besides Europe, particularly France and Japan, that really revere Charlie Chaplin?
India as well. India's got a huge following, yeah.
Interesting. Three countries. Europe. Europe is a continent, Japan and India, who value Charlie Chaplin more than we do here in the United States. Mm-hmm. Well, Lisa, you alluded to the Charlie Chaplin Fest that you had there in Ohio this past weekend. Mm-hmm. If people wanted to learn more about Charlie Chaplin or learn more about your work, where would you direct them to go?
Well, I would direct them to the Chaplin Family website, which is simply charliechaplin.com. Very easy to find. It's based in Paris, France. That's where the Chaplin office is housed. And everything Chaplin is right on there, the list of events and biography, things like that.
Oh, that's great. We've been talking to Lisa Stein, everybody. She has resurrected a book by Charlie Chaplin, A Comedian Sees the World, his travelogue following the opening of City Lights. And she also is a real Charlie Chaplin and now Sid Chaplin aficionado. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be talking to you down the road.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.